Governor Scott Walker says he is running for president to fight and win for the American people. I'm Joy Curtin. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we will talk with our guest political analyst about Walker's resume as he officially enters the 2016 sweepstakes, as well as the reaction to his candidacy. And we want your reaction. What do you make of Governor Walker's presidential campaign kickoff? What kind of odds do you give him of winning the nomination or the whole thing? What kind of president do you think Walker would make? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Curtin Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Curtin Show. Our guest is Charles Franklin. He's the director of the Marquette University Law School Poll, professor of law and public policy, co-founder of Pollster.com, and the founder of PollsandVotes.com. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
So, how big a splash would you say Governor Walker made with his presidential announcement speech in Waukesha yesterday?
Well, if you judge by the satellite trucks that were parked outside the arena, quite a lot. Somebody counted over 20 TV trucks. And so the national press interest was very high, as well as, of course, state and local interest. It was as roused a crowd as you can have, I think, in a auditorium that was variously said to be in the 90s or 100 degree temperature. So it was
a hot day yesterday.
A little tough yesterday. And the governor's speech was a bit long, went over a little over 30 minutes. I think all of that, the heat and the length of the speech, maybe, and perhaps for those of us that watch it all the time, that it was a fairly familiar speech, maybe reduced the impact a little bit.
Is that not typical to go a half an hour with a campaign speech?
I think it would be more common to keep a kickoff speech to something closer to 20 minutes, a little punchier. The governor, I was reading the text of the speech, and I think the text does a clear job of laying out several agendas for him and puts out, if not details, at least specific talking points for elements of reforming federal government, using payments back to the states, for example, to take over programs. So there were some details in there, but I thought in the context of the speech as it was given, maybe those didn't come across quite so clearly. It's a little bit like a presidential State of the Union speech, where presidents have a long list of things that are on their agenda that they want to accomplish that are clearly important to them and that they're committed to doing. But unless you write them down as you're listening, it's pretty easy to feel overwhelmed by so many different things. So I guess on those grounds, I would say a little too much in the details, a little too long, and it would have been nice if the air conditioning could have been turned
up.
Yeah,
you could see a little bit of sweat on Governor Walker's upper lip.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's also a good picture out afterwards of him standing in the beer cooler trying to cool down after it. And goodness knows, you know, you have a lot of sympathy for anybody that has to perform in a very hot and very crowded arena.
Yeah,
but I will say this. I think in terms of the bigger picture, the event yesterday is really the kickoff to now the dash, if you will, through the fall to that first Iowa caucus. He's established himself as a front runner in national polls and in state polls, but he's also fallen off a little bit in recent months, as have some of the other Republican contenders for that matter. Now the issue is he's going to spend a lot of time touring around, spend a lot of time in Iowa this week and in the coming days, and then that August 6th first presidential debate will be the true testing ground for him and for the other 9 people, the total of 10 that are included in that first debate.
Yeah, and we're talking some now about the style and the horse race. So we'll get into the substance of his speech in just a bit. But is this this was kind of late for a presidential candidate to get in there, isn't it, Charles?
Well, it is. There are He's the 15th to join the Republican race. John Kasich may be the 16th in the next week or two, and possibly one more will get in. There was a lot of discussion about whether the governor could pull it off entering so long. The debate, obviously, the budget debate here in the state was more drawn out than it could have been. As a result, he is coming in late. But I think the upside is there's, I think, little he could have done more of during the spring in terms of his travel schedule, his speaking in other states. And so going last may actually turn out to be the virtue that you get the blip in the polls from your announcement and your first travel at the time you need it, going into the first debate in August, rather than having used it up in the middle of the spring the way Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz did. Both of them got pretty nice bumps in the polls. Not a whole lot, but 5 or 6 or 8 points. And those bumps have now largely dissipated. In the same way that Governor Walker's initial bump in January from his breakout speech in Iowa took him to first or second place in most of the polling, he still polls in the top 5 or 6, but he's slipped down, and in the last 3 national polls has slipped down into single digits again, which I think would be disconcerting, except that even the single digits still put him in the top 5 or so. Therefore, coming right now is a time when he needs the bump. It may help him a little bit, but really, the public getting to know him and the public seeing how he performs in the debates starting in August is, I think, the key.
Yeah. You mentioned that he said many of the same things many of us in Wisconsin who have been following him have heard before. But how do you think that his overall theme of "I will fight and win for you" is going to play to the national audience?
I think that the contrast he's trying to draw is between vigorous Republicans such as Ted Cruz, who have succeeded in shutting down the government a couple of times and have certainly been fighters, but Walker would say have been unable to win. And on contrast, those who win but haven't stayed true to the conservative ideals that Governor Walker proposes. I think he would surely include Governor Christie in that set, and probably governors who've accepted the Obama healthcare reform expansion, for example. So he's drawing a very deliberate distinction there that he thinks he does well, because he certainly won elections, but he's also enacted a very conservative governing agenda, which he highlighted in the speech yesterday. So he sees these things as real advantages, trying to appeal to the conservative activists within the party who do want someone who remains true to their conservative ideals, but not someone who simply goes down in flames with a hopeless crusade. That's the contrast he's trying to draw.
Yeah. He said that he was able to do this, too, in a blue state. Is Wisconsin a blue state?
By most electoral measures, it certainly stays this way. We've shifted in a Republican direction, obviously, in the state legislature and in the balance of the congressional delegation. Our presidential record of voting Democratic since 1984, or beginning in 88, is certainly an example that the state can go Democratic and usually does go Democratic at the top of the ticket.
In a presidential year,
though I would also point to Governor Doyle's 2 terms as examples of midterm electorates that elected Democrats pretty recently. So I think we are certainly, by any standard, still a competitive state. However, it is certainly true that the 2010 landslides that brought in a Republican legislature in both the Assembly and in the Senate was absolutely critical to the governor's success. Had he not had a supportive legislature, if even one of those houses had remained in Democratic hands, he would not have been able to enact host of legislation which has gone through and which he now rightly points to as examples of his conservative success. But he was helped a great deal by the balance in the legislature and the skill of the legislative leadership.
We're talking with Charles Franklin. He is the director of the Marquette University Law School poll and a professor of law and public policy about Governor Scott Walker's presidential candidacy. Governor Walker made it official yesterday that he is running for president, and we are welcoming your questions and your reactions to his campaign kickoff. What are Governor Walker's strengths and weaknesses when it comes to being president of the United States? Do you think that his run is going to be a good thing or a bad thing for the state of Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with political scientist Charles Franklin about Governor Walker's formal announcement yesterday that he is running for president. And we wonder what you think about that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, Charles, we talked a little bit about the style. Now what about the substance? What was Governor Walker trying to convey in his speech yesterday?
Well, the speech was broken into an introduction and then three main themes. The first was reform, talking about changing federal programs into block grants back to the states in areas such as transportation, Medicaid, workforce development, he mentioned, and education. This is something he's talked about before, but making those kinds of reforms part of this. He also mentioned opposing Common Core and favoring local school board control and some other things. The second main theme was pro-growth, and there he focused more on ending regulation, making it easy to start a business, encouraging business development. And finally, he closed with safety, which is the word he's preferred to national security or international issues. He says it's an issue of safety for the American public, what happens with ISIS and the Iranian nuclear deal, which he came out as saying he would repeal on day one. And so there was a fairly lengthy segment on international issues, but framed in this notion of this is protecting the safety of the American public, and includes one of his stronger applause lines, which is we should fight ISIS over there, not when they come here. That's been a staple of his stump speech this spring and always gets a good response from the crowd, as it did yesterday.
I don't know if you know this, Charles, but I heard that line before. Is that his line, or was that another Republican presidential candidate's line?
He's been using it. I may have paraphrased it a little awkwardly, but he's been using it consistently since February or March.
Yeah. Just a comment on his various reforms and how he would like the federal government to send more block grants to states for education and transportation and other things, presumably. How does that jive with his refusal to take the federal money for the train or the federal money to expand Medicaid?
Well, clearly he hasn't wanted to participate in some of the federal programs that provided revenue to the states. Presumably, he has an idea of greater flexibility, that these would be less restricted grants. Clearly, the train was restricted to the train and to accept Medicare expansion meant accepting Obamacare. So there were some limits there. Now, block grants to the states is an old idea going back at least to the Nixon administration. The interesting contrast here is between some conservatives who say, let's simply shut down the federal Department of Education, and his explicit call for shifting education support from the federal government to the states. And the speech didn't lay out exactly what those programs are. But since I've already complained that it was a rather long speech, it's sort of unfair to say that I wish there were more details of what he had in mind here.
Well, we have a lot of callers. So let's go to Jackie in Drummond, who is first. Hi, Jackie.
Yes. See, I just like, I just, when I first listened, I was just laughing to myself, because you would have thought he was running against Obama. He mentioned three different areas of support that Obama has that he would, you know, veto or work against. And the first one was the Obamacare, and I thought that was already in and voted in by the Supreme Court that it's legal. So I thought, you know, he's really starting out divisively. And that really made me kind of sad. And I was just wondering, do you think the country is going to see through who he is and what he really does? Is this just an emotional high for a short period of time? And is he going to be like a Palin or a Bachman?
I think if we look at the polling from this spring, he has been more stable in his polling since January, since he broke out. Compared to, if we go back 4 years to the summer of 2011, excuse me, at the similar point in the 2012 election cycle, then we saw a number of candidates rise to the top of the field, only to fall off very sharply within a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. That has not really been the characteristic of Governor Walker's appeal this year or of some of the other candidates. It's true, as I said earlier, that he rose to the mid to upper teens in support, and that's now fallen off to the low teens or in these latest polls down into high single digits. But the same thing has been going on with Rubio and Cruz and some others. I think that we're really seeing more instability, or I'm sorry, I should say it this way. All of the candidates seem to be suffering sort of the doldrums of the early summer, and Donald Trump entering has also sucked up 15% of votes. That has hurt all of the other candidates as well. The bottom line is, though, I think Walker is well positioned to appeal in Iowa and South Carolina. What I think is the real question, and it goes to Jackie's question at some point, is how does he hold up when it's other Republicans asking pointed questions in the debates? We've started to see other candidates focus and directly question the governor on some issues. That will only heat up as we get into the debate season. And especially as long as he remains in first place in Iowa, every other candidate would like to see him not finish in first place in Iowa. So he's certainly going to have to weather some strong attacks from other candidates in the coming months.
Yeah. And also the appeal of some of these positions with a general electorate rather than a primary base electorate. For instance, so when he says on day one, I'm going to call on Congress to repeal Obamacare, and we've heard that before from Republicans, but do we like our Affordable Care Act or not, Charles Franklin? Right. Is that something the country is clamoring for?
Actually, the interesting thing is that since the Affordable Care Act was passed, the measure has been more unfavorable than favorable or more disapproved than approved, depending on the survey question, pretty much in every period, every survey in every month since passage in 2010. But at the moment, over the last few months, support has been gradually rising, opposition gradually falling, so that the two are close to imbalance. There was a nice headline the other day saying that the approval of the Affordable Care Act, which I think in that survey was 47%, was now higher than the president's approval at 44% in the same poll. So there has been a little bit of a shift in opinion about the Affordable Care Act, though it has not yet moved into solidly positive territory and stayed there across multiple polls. When you see that happen, you'll know that attitudes really have shifted on it. But, Joy, you mentioned something that I think is critical, and that is it's the Republican primary electorate that's critical here, and the Iowa caucus and subsequent early primary electorates. When people hear the things that the governor is saying through the prism of the general election, I think you're missing who he's really speaking to right now. which is you don't get to run in the general until you've convinced primary voters to support you.
Let's go to Mark in Waukesha next. Hello, Mark.
Hey, good morning. The one thing I just want to say is the thing that I find most offensive, and a whole bunch of people I also talk to find offensive, is that back in, I think it was October, leading up to the election last year, in one of the debates, Mary Burke and both Scott Walker were confronted with the question, if you are elected as governor, will you fulfill 4 years? And he looked in the camera and said, absolutely. And now that he's running for president, basically sets himself up as a confirmed liar. And I don't think the nation wants a confirmed liar running the show.
Thanks for the call, Mark. But I will parse words and say I'm not sure he said absolutely to that question. I think he said that is the plan.
I think it was something like what you say. But in the broader picture here, every governor running for re-election before a presidential bid has to balance this problem of their current ambition and their future ambition. Clearly, the governor downplayed the chances that he would run for president in October because he needed to be elected governor here. That may or may not be an admirable trait, but it is certainly one that every politician in that situation faces. I think the criticism that he's come under that maybe in the end is more telling is the shift in emphasis of issues. The other example you could cite is his playing down of right-to-work legislation, saying it's not my priority and I don't expect it to come to my desk and I would discourage the leadership from bringing it to my desk. Then when it did pass the legislature, he quickly signed it and now takes credit for it. That's the kind of shift that I think represents some, at the very least, shift of emphasis, but he has been criticized in the national commentary, and sometimes from the right, not just from the left, as being unsure about what his positions really are on some of these things. Shifts on immigration, of which notably he did not mention immigration reform in the speech yesterday. The way he has addressed the same-sex marriage issue last fall compared to his reaction to the Supreme Court's decision a week or two ago. Those are other examples where a sharp shift in emphasis has paradoxically left conservatives wondering if he's the champion that they want on those issues or not.
And we'll get to immigration in a moment, but also the 20-week abortion ban, he highlighted that in his speech yesterday. That was something that came up in the gubernatorial debates with Mary Burke, and at that time he was saying this is between a woman and her doctor for a later-term abortion. But that changed. When he said that on a national broadcast, a conservative group attacked him for not taking on this issue.
I think one of the things that we are seeing playing out here is that in Wisconsin politics, Governor Walker has focused on a small number of issues that he really wants to emphasize. Tax cuts, Act 10, changes in education, things that he's made his signatures. And over the previous 4 years here in the state, he has downplayed other conflictual issues that he would rather not talk about. Same-sex marriage was one of those. Abortion was one of those. Right to work was one of those. In none of those cases that I can recall, has he quite walked up to saying a contradictory position. As he said in his abortion ad in the fall, I'm pro-life. Though he then went on to say, but I have no doubt this is an agonizing decision. What we're seeing now with the appeal to a more conservative primary electorate is a much more direct and strong embrace of some of those issues that he has not made central talking points here in Wisconsin. So his speech yesterday and his typical stump speech mentions defunding Planned Parenthood and limiting abortions. It also mentions Castle Doctrine on guns. Those are things which he passed during his first term, or now second term, and yet they are things that he rarely included in his standard stump speech here in the state in the past. So you can argue about whether there really changes of position or changes of emphasis, but the irony is that some on the right are now criticizing him for having not been clear enough and strong enough and visible enough on those issues in the past.
Why didn't he bring up immigration? Donald Trump and his very controversial remarks about immigration have apparently helped propel him to the top of the polls, and the governor did make some controversial remarks about immigration in the past.
I will say I was a little surprised. In fact, early in the speech, I told the people I was with, sure, we're going to hear about immigration, so I was wrong yet again. We did not hear about anything on immigration. I am a little surprised because while he has shifted position on it and has openly said I've shifted on this, this maybe is one of those cases I expected him to take the bull by the horns, reassert his current position on it, and perhaps pursue the argument that he made a few weeks ago on legal immigration, that we should assess legal immigration by its economic impacts here at home. That has some of the populist argument that he has been very successful in his previous campaigns here. And I kind of thought we would see that come up, but I was wrong. It did not come up at all.
Don in Madison is with us now. Hi, Don.
Good morning. I came across a New York Times article last week which described the governor's status as a presidential contender, and also people on his staff of national stature who were what you might call Republican heavy hitters. Also, the governor's analogy of himself, making analogy of himself to Ronald Reagan, I suspect he would probably act a lot like he thinks Ronald Reagan might have acted had if he does become president.
Yes, Governor Walker holds up Ronald Reagan as an ideal, and some of that is universal in the Republican Party to hold up Reagan as the last great Republican president. I think with Scott Walker, it seems more personal than that, that as a young man, he admired Reagan greatly and does use him as a bit of a standard to compare himself to, certainly in audiences. Walker has geared up, from that New York Times article, his national campaign staff, brought in experienced people and on-the-ground staff in Iowa, New Hampshire, and other places. The one thing that we haven't yet seen, it's beginning to trickle out for other organizations, is how much his fundraising has succeeded in bringing in over the spring and where that puts him in the ranks. You know, Governor Bush brought in over $100 million, which was very eye-catching. Most of the other top-tier candidates are more in the 20s or so. And a few, like Governor Perry, are surprisingly low, under a couple of million dollars. So this is the other race that is going on, not just the public opinion race, but the fundraising race. It's an area where Walker was expected to excel because of his national donor list, which he had been able to build up thanks to the recall, which allowed him to travel the country and raise money, unlimited money, for part of the time due to Wisconsin election law. So that was really the gift that keeps on giving to the governor from the recall, that he has that national donor base. Now the question will be, how much has it really paid off this spring, and what can we read into success or lack of success there. We'll be getting that report any day now, I believe. Yesterday I saw some rumors about what it was, but until the paperwork is actually filed, I'm not sure where it will be.
Time for news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School poll and a professor of law and public policy, about Governor Scott Walker's presidential campaign and Governor Walker's resume as he officially enters the 2016 race. And we'll welcome more questions and reactions from you at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. First, we'll check the latest news.
We are so honored to have you join with us here today as we officially announce that we are running to serve as your President of the United States of America.
That's Governor Scott Walker formally announcing his intention to run for president. And we are talking with Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School poll and a professor of law and public policy, about a Walker candidacy, and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So I wanted to, Marilyn on Facebook says, skip the hype and seriously consider just how unqualified Scott Walker is. His resume is extremely weak. If the national media get down to the deeper questions, that will become quite evident, and he will be out before he gains any momentum. What's your reaction to that, Charles?
Yeah, I think this is where people see what their politics tell them to see. You can certainly criticize Governor Walker, goodness knows. He's received plenty of criticism. But I think this is not the perception of those voters that are going to matter, which is in the short term, which is those Republican primary voters who, look at a record of just over 4 years as governor, but one which includes successful enactment of a laundry list of longstanding Republican goals. You can certainly raise the question when it comes to a general election whether the governor's positions will be effective there, and the makeup of a presidential year electorate with very high turnout, what will that do? So I think there's plenty of reason to wonder about how competitive he will be if he makes it to the fall. But we really are two nations here when it comes to the deep divide and polarization in our perceptions of the governor. And here in the state especially so, where polarization was cooked in the crucible of the Act 10 and then the recall, the rest of the country does not share as strong a set of polarized views of Governor Walker as we do here in the state. And so I think it may be of some surprise to Wisconsinites, both Republican and Democrat, that Republicans maybe don't welcome him on the national stage the way Republicans here might expect him to be. But likewise, Democrats and perhaps independents don't reject him in the way that highly polarized Democrats here in the state would expect him to be. So one of the surprising things that keeps showing up in national polling is that Governor Walker remains one of the lesser known figures in the presidential race nationally, consistently getting over 40% that say they don't know enough about him to have an opinion. That is an area where it could fill in that lack of awareness to his benefit, or you could fill it in to his detriment. That's where we'll wait and see as the campaign progresses and the debates ensue.
AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka put out a six-word statement about a Walker candidacy. Scott Walker is a national disgrace, he said. How big a role are unions going to play in this campaign?
Well, unions, even as they have, been on a decades-long decline nationally, still remain a very important power, both economically and in terms of volunteers, in the Democratic Party and in the Democratic nominations and in public policy at the federal level. So I certainly expect them to play an important role broadly in the campaigns coming up this fall. Here in the state, they have been pushed to play a lesser role as membership has dried up and financial resources have dried up in the wake of Act 10 and perhaps now in the wake of Right to Work. So I think it's an important role, but I would also point to his statement as an example of what I'm saying. In a highly polarized environment, and goodness knows unions are as polarized against Walker as they could be, a statement like that reinforces the polarization within the base. It does very little to convince independent voters who don't know much about Walker to develop a reason to dislike him, which presumably is what Mr. Trumka would prefer.
Let's go back to the phones. Craig in Onalaska. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. I'd like to say that I voted for Ronald Reagan twice. I voted for my first presidential vote was for Richard Nixon. I think Walker reminds me more of Tricky Dick than he does of Ronald Reagan. I've always found Walker to be lacking in the honesty category, and I'm wondering now that he's a national figure, will there be a lot of investigations, do you think, into his honesty, starting, for example, using the Freedom of Information Act that he tried to do away with here in Wisconsin?
Thanks, Green. Craig also was going to bring up, you know, the Act 10 dropping the bomb when you know, never talked about it before dropping the bomb.
Right. I think that the national press corps is certainly going to pay attention to Governor Walker precisely because he's in that top tier of candidates, not to mention that his record here invites the press to be interested in him and write about it. I think there will be a lot of scrutiny to him. On the other hand, he has been pretty strongly scrutinized through the John Doe investigation, the processes behind that. So it's not as if this is new territory. A lot of the national press has to catch up on the very late weekend nights that the local press corps has spent reading his emails. So for that reason, I think you will see national attention to things that we maybe have already gone over here in Wisconsin. But I think the broader question will be how he conducts himself on the campaign trail and how reporters, as well as ordinary voters, see him behaving there and what kind of a person they come to the conclusion that he is.
A piece in the New York Times said Walker has been hurt by a number of gaffes after getting off to a roaring start. The gaffes include the trying to remove the Wisconsin idea from the budget, and more recently the last-minute budget proposal to roll back Wisconsin's open records law that Craig referred to. How big a deal are these items going to be?
I think they're grist for the mill, but primary voters in other states don't wake up every morning and click on Wisconsin websites to see what's going on in our state politics. So things that here in the state that are very problematic, such as the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which has gotten lots of headlines lately and certainly raises questions about how well economic development has actually been conducted through that agency, those are serious policy issues here in the state. They're very unlikely to motivate voters elsewhere. Possibly other candidates will raise some of those examples to question whether the governor's record here in the state is as strong as he says it is in focusing, for example, on increasing jobs. I'm sure that we will see reporters and other candidates point to the jobs growth numbers in our 38th ranking to question whether the governor really has the magic to do that. So I do think he will get criticism and scrutiny from both the press and especially from fellow Republicans. And I would stress that coming from the fellow Republicans because criticism from your political opponents, from Democrats, is relatively easy for professional politicians to push aside. When it's coming from your own party, it's harder to discredit it as purely ideological or partisan. And thus, the governor will need, and I'm sure will have, answers to those criticisms. The question is, how well do they stand up?
Mary in Brookfield. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning, Joy. Mr. Franklin, first of all, I do find you somewhat biased towards Scott Walker in not only your attitude, but I just, you know, I question your
Mary, what's your question?
Here's my question. My question is this. I have not heard anything brought up about the fact that were he elected, he would be the first college dropout to serve as president.
I wanted to bring this up because is this going to hurt his chances, Charles Franklin? And let me just say that we don't go after our guests. We talk about the issues.
That's okay. I've certainly heard it before. I just wasn't quite sure which direction Mary thought I was biased. So I was searching for which way. And it's fine. Not a big deal. I think that the college issue has been raised and will be raised, but for someone who's at the stage of his career that Governor Walker is, the finishing of a degree is probably far less important than his conduct in office, and whether you agree with him or disagree with him, that drives you to come to a conclusion about support. So I'd be surprised about that, if that rises to be an important issue. The other side is, we'll see how much American voters see that as a question, as opposed to something that other candidates want to raise in question.
So Governor Walker is going to be spending a lot of time on the campaign trail. What does that mean for the state of Wisconsin? Who's minding the shop?
Right. Well, I think that'll be a big question. The staff, and no doubt, as the governor says, he's in touch with his staff. But, you know, in our polling, we've asked whether people can run for president and also do the job of governing back home, and in every time we've asked that question, a substantial majority doubt that you can do both. So this is, I think, an issue. Now, the budget is behind us now, and so the legislature may be taking up other bills in the coming months, but it's not the kind of pressure that the budget bill always provides. So in that sense, being gone between now and March, shall we say, is not in the heat of the legislative session. I do think that it's an issue for the governor with voters here in the state. We saw a drop in his job approval. He had not been below 46% approval over the previous 3 years, but in our early April poll fell to 41%. That is is the lowest that we've registered beginning in January 2012, though some of the 2011 polling was a bit below 41. And so I do think the governor has a problem back home of being seen as neglecting the state in favor of the presidential run. Where that leaves him in the long run is a question. Where it leaves the state is a question. But I think surely in the short run, legislative leadership will have more to do with the agenda in the coming months.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette University Law School Poll and a professor of law and public policy. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Kayla Blado for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. We will be welcoming in financial planner Kevin McKinley for another edition of On Your Money coming up in our next hour. Tomorrow at this time, by the way, we are planning on having a big question on Governor Walker for president? That's tomorrow's big question here on the Ideas Network.